Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Two pioneering researchers in the field of psychology, Todd Kashtin and Robert Biswas-Diener, bring us the upside of your dark side, why being your whole self, not just your good self, drives success and fulfillment. The new book looks to smash the misconception that positive emotions like happiness and mindfulness are the most useful emotions. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Robert Biswas-Diener to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here.
Again, the title of the book is The Upside of Your Dark Side. What got you thinking about those less good emotions?
Well, both my co-author Todd and I are positive psychologists. We do love happiness. We do love positivity. We do think it's useful. But we've also seen the way that people in modern society sort of run away with it. This positivity movement is something of a tidal wave in American society in particular, where it's almost a demand that you must be happy. And if you're not smiling and you're not joyful, then somehow you failed at our cultural script. And so we wrote this a little bit to remind people that there's a full range of human psychological architecture.
Do we intentionally try to avoid unpleasant feelings?
Well, I think we do, because exactly as you suggested, they're unpleasant. If you feel a little bit bored one afternoon, you feel the sting of guilt, those are things that are sort of icky feeling. So a lot of people handle that by trying to distract themselves. You have a beer, you turn on the television, you just try and get consolation from a friend. And what we get out of practice is actually just tolerating them. You know, in this day and age, you can just whip out your smartphone and entertain yourself, and boredom is instantly vanquished. But I recommend that people actually just sit with boredom a little bit. It's a little bit like going to the gym and training your muscles. You know, when you get practice kind of tolerating the small hardships of life, the little setbacks and irritations, you're sitting in a better position to handle the big curveballs when those arrive.
And you look at this as emotional agility, and to be able, ultimately, to access our full range of emotions, which I can only assume are there for a reason.
Absolutely. Psychologists think of emotions as information. That is, they're sort of like a radar system that's tracking your life, kind of giving you a mental thumbs up or thumbs down. You don't get that parking spot close to the store you wanted, and you're a little frustrated. It's a little thumbs down. Your spouse surprises you with a dinner out. You kind of get a mental thumbs up. So all of these emotions are telling us something interesting about life. Even, you know, anger, you know, something that people think of as quite toxic. This is telling you that you need to defend something that you care about. Guilt is telling you that you have violated your own moral code and that your ship needs a course correction. Boredom tells you that either you've mastered everything or it motivates you to seek out new learning. Even confusion can motivate people to engage more deeply with a topic, to work through it and understand it. So all of these are there for a reason. Fear is another great one. It helps you to protect yourself and avoid harm. So all of them can work very well for you. So I think of emotions as being like a thermometer, and they need to measure the entire range of temperature. And people who only want to be happy are sort of knowingly saying, I want to break my thermometer so that it only measures a few degrees instead of everything.
So you talk in the book about, you were talking about anger and how it fuels creativity, but we have to see through the anger to realize that.
Absolutely. Anger is one of the most difficult of the emotions, the unpleasant of emotions, for people to hear about, because it has such a bad reputation. And it is linked to more creativity. It's linked to more courage, more kind of appropriate risk-taking. It's linked to all sorts of pretty desirable outcomes. But you also have to, of course, be smart about it. You have to wield it well. You know, my co-author and I would never suggest that people should just be out screaming at others or engage in violence or something like that. But paying attention to anger and then kind of using the insights that anger gives you can be very helpful.
So one of the things that you talk about is how some of these negative emotions can be signals, embarrassment being one of them. And going back to an earlier question and just for clarification, how do you get to the point of identifying it as a signal, of knowing then what the positive side and positive aspect of that particular emotion, we'll take embarrassment as an example, and improve upon that and say, okay, well, this can help me make a behavioral change?
It's such a good question, and I'll admit it's a really difficult question because it's sort of the million-dollar question. You know, it's sort of how do I get good at this? So what I would recommend to all of your listeners is just start with the assumption that the things you feel are signals. They convey useful information, whether that's being embarrassed that you tripped in front of a room of colleagues or whether you're mildly afraid to give a public presentation. That information is telling you something. So you just start by listening to it. What's the lesson here? You know, should I be more careful when I walk? And then the story we tell in a kind of a secondary way in our head. I mean, people sort of drag that emotion forward. So if you trip in front of your colleagues, you might feel foolish momentarily, but that's actually something that's not really all that bad and you can recover from pretty quickly. The problem that most people have is that then they continue to beat themselves up about it. Oh, I can't believe I did that. And what do those people think of me? And they sort of, you know, there's a snowball effect of spinning it out of control. And that's where people really do need to stop and be aware and say, you know, really all it was is a mild embarrassment. And it just reminds me that I'm on stage and I need to put my best foot forward, in this case, literally. And that's okay.
Often these emotions come in and they're not clearly labeled. So you don't necessarily know that guilt is guilt. Is it remorse? Is it regret?
I love that. It's very astute for you to bring this up. This is something we call, it's got a clunky psychological title. We call it emotion differentiation. And it turns out that the better you are at labeling specific emotions, the better you do in life. So people who just say, you know, kind of grunt and say, oh, I'm just feeling bad, they actually don't do all that well. But when you get to the level of sort of verbal expertise where you can say, I'm a little bit irritated and a little bit frustrated, I feel kind of like a victim, I guess I feel self-pity as well, and maybe it's tinged with a little bit of sadness, and you realize that these emotional states can coexist. You know, you can be afraid and curious together. You can be kind of angry and optimistic together. And the better you are at sort of developing and cultivating an expert vocabulary so that you can identify emotions in this way, the better off. We find that these people basically are happier, they're more successful at work, they're better managers. We find benefits across the board.
And do we have to go the next step, which is what caused that emotion in the first place? So when she gave the tickets to him instead of asking me, even though I had something to do that night, that's why I'm feeling this way.
It can be helpful. Most people, and I certainly would include myself in this, do a little bit of filling in with those stories, right? I mean, we only have sort of our own unique point of view.
Right.
But it is, if you're feeling jealous, maybe as in the case that you just mentioned, it is helpful to have a little bit of background information, sort of open the dossier and say, well, what's all involved with this jealousy? Is it the particular actors involved? Was it the event that I really wanted to go to that these tickets were for? And it's worth kind of considering a little bit because that legitimizes the emotion of jealousy. You don't have to feel like you have no right to it, but it also helps you kind of work out the solution to the problem.
When you talk about worth considering it, how long should we consider it? Is it the slow drive home as we're doing a burn on something that we try to dissect for the next time, or should it be more immediate than that?
It's a really good question. I'm a little reluctant to say, you know, well, as a psychologist, you know, you've got 7 minutes with your jealousy and then time's up and I'm going to kick you out of the office.
Right.
But the truth is we find in general that people naturally feel some positive emotions about 80% of the time and some mildly negative emotions about 20% of the time. And when you just ask people, how long does it take you to recover from a normal bout of anger, they usually list somewhere between about a half hour to a couple of hours. So, you know, it's not like it's ruining their entire day. And it's only when they're really enraged and stewing on it that it's spanning days or ruining their week. And that we recommend against, because holding on to anger in that way does have some health consequences. It could have social consequences. So I would say just a relatively short amount of time.
And there are times where holding on to anger is not only good, it's appropriate.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I would say for critics who are vocal in their anti-anger stance, you know, it would be hard to defend your children against a bully. It would be hard to speak out against an injustice that you perceive in the world without some degree of kind of indignation or anger of some variety. So I think that it's a wonderful part of our psychological architecture if used well.
And the idea is to understand it, to be able to use it, and to understand those signals when they're coming in.
That's absolutely right. And I think one of the things that interferes with that is our drive for comfort. That people really in the modern age are more able to be comfortable than at any time in history. That is, if you're too cold, just, you know, flip on the heat in your house. If you're too bored, whip out your iPhone.
Right.
You know, whatever it is. So both physical comforts and psychological comforts. And this is actually kind of a burden that we're hoisting on children that I think is interesting, which is we really want them to be accepted at school. We want them to have high self-esteem. We want them to be engaged. And when you hear parents talk about what they want for kids, this is what they say. And then as sort of a footnote, they add, oh, but, you know, we also want, you know, our daughter to be appropriately challenged in math. And there's a sort of blindness, there's a lack of recognition that the challenge that's so essential to learning and growth in the classroom is also really healthy socially and on the playground. But we're sort of stripping kids of the opportunity to face those hardships and identify those negative emotions or to validate those negative emotions. And we're swapping that out with parenting strategies that say, oh, you're okay. Oh, don't complain. We can get over this. It's going to be all right. Instead of saying, wow, you're really bored this afternoon. That's tough.
So what do you hope that we ultimately get out of embracing our whole self?
Well, I think in some very fundamental way, it's what being human is all about. It's a permission slip to feel everything that you can possibly feel. And most of that time, you're going to feel good. You're going to feel meaning. You're going to feel joy, love, affection for others, enthusiasm, pride. But it also legitimizes the idea that anger and guilt and jealousy and sadness are valid experiences. And some of the best art comes out of this. Some of the most tender moments in our relationships are born from these emotions. So it just broadens the scope, and it makes people, as you just said, whole rather than only living half a life.
The name of the book is The Upside of Your Dark Side, Why Being Your Whole Self, Not Just Your Good Self, Drives Success and Fulfillment. The book is published by Hudson Street Press. Robert Biswas-Diener, I thank you very much for being with us this morning and sharing your expertise.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Upside of Your Dark Side, co-written by Robert Biswas-Diener. It is published by Hudson Street Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.